All right, let's get started. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this dance dialogue conversation with Amara Rahim and Cyril Joyner. My name is Estelle, and I am the producer at Lucy Gearan Inc. I would like to begin by acknowledging that I am hosting today's conversation from the land of the Wurundjeri, Woi Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, and to pay my respects to elders past and present. I would also like to extend this to any First Nations people joining us tonight. I am a woman with green eyes, brown hair tied up in a bun. I am wearing a blue and pink tartan top. And behind me is a virtual background, and it's an image of a grassy paddock with a tree in the middle and a fairly cloudy sky. My pronouns are she, her. Before I get to introducing our wonderful artists, I would just like to run through a little bit of housekeeping. At the bottom of your screen, you'll notice a chat button. In the chat, we encourage you to let us know where you're zooming in from today. And you can also make comments in the chat as we go along. And then alongside the chat button, you'll see there is a Q&A button. So if you have a question that you would like Amara and Cyril to respond to, you can just pop them in that Q&A. And then later on, we'll select some questions from here to chat, to talk to. You can also upvote other people's questions using the thumbs up button. This talk is being Auslan interpreted. A warm welcome to our interpreters, David, Ben and Sarah. It's great to have you with us tonight. And we're also live transcribing the talk. So if you would like to view the captions during the talk, just click on the link that we've just posted in the chat, and this will appear in a separate browser window for you. We will be recording the audio of tonight's session so that we can publish it on our website after the chat. All right, now that housekeeping's out of the way, on to tonight's talk. Before I hand over to Amara and Cyril, some brief introductions. Amara Rahim is a dance artist, writer, and researcher living part-time in Melbourne and part-time in Black Range, rural Victoria. Her work takes multiple forms, including performance, video, installation, text, woven objects, and sound. Amara works as a solo and collaborative artist. In 2021, Amara was awarded a research residency through Critical Path, a regional art and research residency through the National Trust and Blindsight, a moving forward residency through LGI, and an on-residence through Dance House and Punctum Inc. Amara sits on the Artistic Advisory Group for Chunky Move and the Artistic Directorate for Next Wave. Welcome, Amara. Cyril Joyner is an artist working within the field of dance and choreography. She is obsessed with language and its relationship to dance and dancing and the material and political implications of this connection. Cyril is creating movement, text, and object works that focus upon the notions of mutation, translation, and code switching. Her interests are formed by her Welsh identity and the minority status of her mother tongue, Cymraeg or Welsh. An interest in sight and sight specificity is always present in Cyril's work. As well as making her own work, Cyril performs with and for artists such as Met Edvardson, Hannah Erdman, Rari Donovan, Dora Garcia, and Alice McKenzie. Welcome, Cyril. I am now going to hand over to you both.
Great. Thanks so much, Estelle and LGI, for hosting us tonight. I wanted to start also by acknowledging that I am calling in or speaking from Jaburung country, which is in Black Range, as part of Gariwurd, the Northern Grampians. And it's very ancient land here. I mean, all of Australia is really ancient land, but here you really feel time with these granite rocks that surround the place that we're in. And I just want to really acknowledge my deep respect and gratitude for being an uninvited guest on unceded lands. And I wanted to also just acknowledge that we can't see the people who can see us. We know that you're out there. We don't know who you are. We imagine and trust that you're our friends. And yeah, I just wanted to say hello to you. It's a kind of this odd situation not to be able to see the audience at all. But if you have questions or anything to say, please just, say it and chat with us and share it through the Q&A, the questions through the Q&A. So I just wanted to introduce Cyrielle, really, or introduce Cyrielle and I as a as friends and as recent collaborators, or maybe interlocutors. We've known each other for some years now. I don't know exactly sort of how we met, but we've shared lots of space and time together in London, particularly when I lived there for a long time and Cyrielle was also there. But we've also met in West Wales, which is a place that Cyrielle comes from and has very strong roots and friendships there. We've met particularly through the work of Simon Whitehead, who lives in West Wales. And then sort of most recently in 2016, I think the last time we saw each other in the flesh was in Findhorn in Scotland, where one of our shared kind of teachers and influences in making performance and dance is Deborah Hay. And we were doing a workshop with Deborah Hay over 10 days, where we were looking at scores for a new work that Deborah was making called A Figure at Sea, A Figure a Sea.
I think.
What was that?
Figure a C, I think.
Yeah, Figure a Sea. And yeah, and so we share like a I mean, Deborah Hay's work has influenced both of us greatly, and we share that as part of our languages and languaging. I have been in conversation with Cyrielle through a residency. I think you heard a list of residencies that I've been doing. They've all sort of rolled from one to another because many of them have been pivoted into my home due to lockdowns. So they've blurred a bit. Perhaps I invited Cyrielle to have some conversations with me because I was really interested in her practice, her sight responsive practice, which I've gotten to know over some time. I think there are many points in which we converge and which we share research and principles and ways of moving and ways of thinking and ways of working with text. And then there are some very interesting points in which we diverge. So for example, I've been working for some time with archives. I've been working with ephemeral archives, archives that are held in the body, but also archives that might be held in a building. And what happens when, for example, a dance studio is demolished? What happens to the memories of that building and what's held in it? And when I was talking to Cyrielle about these archives, she responded with the thought that she doesn't really work with archives, but rather with collections and collecting. And this really switched something for me. It was a real sort of fork in the road when I thought, ah, oh, this is really interesting to think of collecting, as in when I as I understood that word from a kind of curatorial practice of gathering and choosing and editing process there, which of course I was doing, but yeah, I was really curious in the what comes out of that, because we're both dealing with memory, with language, with diaspora, with minority, with lostness. So it was a great thing. I think I'm going to pass it on to Suriol to say something, and we'll get into a conversation. But I just forgot to visually describe myself. So I am a Sri Lankan-born woman. I have brown skin. I have short, curly, dark hair with quite a bit of silver, but with this beautiful visual filter, you can't really see it. I'm wearing a blue top, and I have red lipstick on and some fancy gold earrings, which you also can't see. And my virtual background is of a place, a forest near where I live in Garrywood. And it's got these beautiful yellow little flowers called billy buttons that are native. Suriol, I asked Suriol whether she would begin with reading something from a glossary that she has made. This is another point of connection and divergence for us, because I've been working a lot with narrative and yarning, and also with logs, making these kinds of logging practices, which I won't go into now. But Suriol has been working, she says that she doesn't really work with narrative when she writes. She works with glossaries and indexes and collecting. So that was also very intriguing for me. So I'm just going to, invite Suriol into the conversation, and perhaps she'll begin with a reading. Hi, Suriol.
Hi, Tio Khamara. Thank you. I want to begin from acknowledging country. Although I don't know what that means, to be honest. I'm speaking from Stockholm, from Mariatorget, which is a square in the South Island. I'm looking out the window. You can see a square. And it's just the South Island in Stockholm. I always have one foot in Wales, and one foot where I am. Sort of one of my legs is always in Wales, I say. Just waiting in Gymraeg, diolch am y gwahoddiad, a diolch I bawb sydd yma. Thank you everybody who's here. I also want to acknowledge that, as Amara said, we know you're there. And in this sense of acknowledging where we're speaking from, I wonder where I'm speaking into. I don't know where I'm speaking into. But I'm glad you're there. I should describe myself. I am a white woman with shoulder length kind of wavy hair. I'm wearing a green, quite a vivid green scarf and gray patterned jumper. And I have a visual background, a virtual background today, a black and white photograph of a hill. If I move to the sideways, you can see more of a hill. This is a hill in Aberystwyth, so near the sea. And I think it's a cloudy day in the photograph. And my pronouns are she, her. I think those are all the things I wanted to acknowledge or say for reading. So diolch. I am, I'm very glad you're all there. So, as Amara said, I started working with glossary. It's something that I started working on. It's very much connected to, I suppose, working with working with Welsh and working in Welsh in context where I know people won't understand, which for me is part of it also. This multilingual aspect is really interesting and important for me, not only in the sense of, you know, that I'm not only using Welsh for other people to understand, but I'm also interested in language as material. So text and language also as is something that I work with in dance, so in terms of sensing. So I started working with glossary because I think partly because people were asking me, well, what do you mean by this or in your work? And I started to understand that perhaps through the practice or through making, that particular word started to hold not only a definition, but a kind of world for me. So I use glossary as a, I suppose in, it's playful, but it's also a way of collecting or gathering together materials in a work. So this is a glossary. I call it Geirva Knislinge, and Knislinge is a small town in the south of Sweden where I've been working. There's a residency place called Mark, where I've started to make a new group work, which is really trying to investigate what is a site-specific dance. What would that be? And to develop on some solo scores that I've been working on, to investigate sort of deeper what that is. What is a site-specific dance? And so yeah, I'll read the Geirva. So first, it's a list of words, and then I'll read a couple of the actual glossaries. Okay, now I'm looking at a paper, so I don't see you anymore, Amara. Okay, Geirva. Site, place, situatedness, map, constellation, carrion, site, in brackets, specific, responding, meeting, rememory. And rememory is, so this is a aside, or this is in addition to the list. Rememory, it's a word from the writer Toni Morrison. So that's not my word. But rememory, she says I can read it here. She says, rememory as in recollecting, and remembering as in reassembling the members of the body, the family, the population of the past. So that's rememory from Toni Morrison. And that's a quote from Memory, Creation and Fiction. An essay of hers. So, rememory. Remember collecting. I know some things. Patterns of attention. Sounding objects. The dance that travels. Two legs, two dances. Sighting. Sight. -ing. My, you, their, our body as a site. Hosting. Memory. Memory making. In brackets, not keeping. Seasons, location, time, tuning in. Amser, to with. Equinox, rhythm, refrain. Transforming in place. And that has a movement to it also. Transforming in place. The song of the place. Taking notes in dance. language, light, reciprocity, being danced by the dance. In capital letters, home. Feeling feelings, turning, change, collection, collective. Not keeping memories, but making memories. Re-pattern, re-memory, recollection, reframe, out of place. So that's a list. And then, or that's the list. And then I thought I would read one for you. I will read, I'm going to read Constellation for you. Is the speed okay, Amara, or should I speak slower?
It's good with me.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's good with Sarah, hopefully.
Okay, great. All right, I read the Constellation. It's not very long. Constellation. Ser en Auernos, learning the names and shapes with H and M from a book. Stargazing for Dummies that H got from the library. Learning where we face from seeing them. Learning how we turn by locating the constellations and the constellations of constellations. This is about the shape of relations and seeing that shape and its space in space. Constellations are beautiful. They shine and are as much about the shining as about the darkness in between. Orion and his dogs, his belt. On a clear night, his bow and arrow. Sirius the dog star, colorful. Seven sisters, a village near where my mother, Mamgi and Tatki, come from. I can hear their voices saying, seven sisters. A big ooh in the sky, it swivels through the seasons. Directionality, understanding my place. The constellation lets me test where I am. I think of a constellation of people dancing. The constellation is always them, plus their matrix of people, places, feelings, thoughts, everything that makes them them. And as I dance in this constellation, this special, specific, particular relation, so do all their extended constellations dance and accompanying dance. I like to think of the constellation as a relation that is both in movement and stasis, and that my perception of these seemingly opposing states changes with time. So that was, that's Constellation. What do you think? Shall I read you another one, Amara, or is that enough?
I think maybe for now that's enough. Maybe we'll arrive at another point.
Yeah.
I really have so enjoyed this word collecting, and I suppose constellation is related to that somehow. But yeah. I've really, really enjoyed, I'm not entirely sure yet what's happening, but either shifting away from archive towards collection or thinking of archive as a collection. But it's just been a really, it's just become a score in my, both in terms of, I mean, it's not that I wasn't doing it before, but it's just that frame, I suppose. And, you know, I've been collecting things for you. I've been collecting sounds for you. I've been collecting, words that I've overheard. So this last week, actually, I just got back yesterday from a kayaking trip. We went along the Bokara, I think that's how you say it, which is the indigenous name for the Glen Elg River. And we kayaked from campsite to campsite. And I danced in every campsite that I arrived in. And I danced the score that you gifted me, which was Touching Place, because I really love that one, that somehow touch and touching place. And I think maybe touching place and turning towards place have become kind of interwoven, I suppose, in how I've been remembering some of the things that we've been talking about. And one thing that continues to fascinate me is, the title. I think the title of your score and the work that you're doing is called Listening To, and then Listening To the Place, whatever it's called. And I am, I'm engaged in a practice that I've called Listening In. And I've been wondering a lot about the difference between the words to and the word in, when it comes to listening. And when I was on the river kayaking, I was asking myself, am I on the river or am I in the river? In the kayak, because the kayak is like, it's such a different perspective, because it's from the view of water. You see the world from the middle of water rather than looking at the water. Or But I sort of thought, but I'm not in the water. I'm in the boat. I'm in the vessel. I'm on the water, really, somehow. So what is it to be in, and why, what is it to listen in? And listening in comes from maybe some practices around eavesdropping and the work of some artists in the UK, Joanna, or in Scotland, actually, I think, Joanna Lindsay. Is who I got it from, or the frame of eavesdropping, but just like really listening, but also listening in, as in listening into myself and the different voices that are present in me at any given time. Listening, putting my ear to the tree or to the grass or to the to the surface of the earth or something. So I just feel like there's an interiority that I'm trying to listen into. But then listening to place, it feels to me like, I don't know, it feels a bit more, there's a bit more space, or it's a bit more vertical, or it's a bit more, maybe even three-dimensional or something. What do you make of that?
It's a really interesting question. I saw it in your notes this morning. I was thinking of it. It's the first thing I thought of was with this work. So I made it originally in Glasgow. And it had the title Gwrando ar Gyfan. So Gyfan is the place, and Gwrando ar is listening to in Welsh. And then the second life in here, listening to Tanto. So Tanto is a park. And originally, I mean, and now most recently listening to Orlången. And I think, yeah, the first thing I thought of was, I have a, it's for me, the score, so there's two aspects of the score. There's a practice, a score to practice every day that is really connected to this touching the place. So to go there to touch the place, whatever that means for the dancer, for the performer. But the score is really to listen to the soundscape as a song and dance to it. So there's a sort of there's a transformation in the listening also. So there's this listening practice that is really influenced by Pauline Oliveros, I realized later, as happens so often. You think you make something and then you're like, oh yeah, but that's actually this other artist made it, which is really beautiful. But this listening score that I've named atmospheric listening, that is I think in Pauline Oliveros, it's a global attention, I think what she calls, I think. And it's to listen to all of the sounds that you can and cannot hear, both internal and external, in this constantly expanding time, space, continuum of sound. So it's got this sort of sense of space, as you say. But I think this listening too speaks about a kind of interpretation, actually. Like the dancer is invited to listen and to call the soundscape a song and to dance to it. Whatever song is for them, whatever dance is for them on that day. And that over time, what they're doing is that they're then collecting in that place. And it's a place that the dancer has chosen for themselves. So it's not me. So most recently, I've been working with a dancer called Anna Fitoussi. So situating the dance with her. So first I was dancing it, and now we've been in this process of her taking the score and dancing it. And so she chose the most recent place. And then the invitation is that over time that the dancer collects objects, so sound objects, in the place. And also makes a collection from that place. So there's this transformation interpretation aspect that I think this listening to, I don't know if that's really clear, but why the listening to is more interpretive. But for me, that was kind of the first thought that I had, that it was, it's like listening to a song, like listening to music. And then the other thing is that, yes, it's immersive, and it's very much about, you know, me, Cyril, or Anna, or Amara being there. But there's this reciprocity that when I move it, it's also, I'm also part of the place. But I'm speaking too. There is this, yes, I'm part of it, but there's also in the score, there's a definite, what's the word? I don't know the Welsh or Swedish or English word. It's like it's like there's a membrane between the person and the place. Mm. It's not that you are, and in the dancing also, the dancing is also kind of materializing that. Like that can be seen in the person. When I watch Anna dancing, or when I watched Anna dancing, I could see when there was this reciprocity between her and the place, and the place on her, but this specific place that she had chosen. So that's why it's listening to for me. And listening in this interiority, but there's also, I thought also, but it's a house. Hmm. Maybe.
Hmm. Yeah, that, I mean, that's interesting, because I think that then proposes a kind of binary between in and out, or in and to. And I'm definitely very interested in relationality rather than binary. And so, and there's of course into. but I've had a bit of a bit of an epiphany maybe this week, or a thing happen, which is, you know, as you know, Cyril, I've been working with, or trying to work with, objects in my research recently. And I have also been, for my Moving Forward residency at LGI, I've been proposing to look at research as a ritual. And so this relationship between object, listening, and ritual are three sort of intertwining things that I've been trying to deal with. And for some months, I've been really struggling with objects because I've been really struggling with, you know, material objects, let's say. I know that sound has materiality, and I love the word membrane because that proposes another kind of skin, and another way of touching. And I've been thinking about objects as story as objects or scores as objects. And these are all kind of, I think they could be described as hyper objects in that they are things rather than a chair or a book or, but I really wanted to, and I've been working with story, with song, with sound for a long time, but I sort of wondered whether I was avoiding an object in my research, and I've been really, but when I pick up an object, I just often just go, why am I working with this? You know, I don't even know how to work with this, or I just don't have object practice or something like this. And I think also it's exacerbated by the fact that I did my PhD in the School of Architecture and Design, where I met a lot of object-oriented practitioners who really like know objects. And so I just always felt like, I don't really do objects. Like that's what I contribute, is that I don't do objects. And I was surrounded by people who were like jewelers and fashion designers and, you know, other kinds of designers who really like know things about things. Anyway, I wanted to bring, we talked about bringing objects, and I found something that feels really, I don't know, new and exciting. And it's, I'm just going to put it on. I don't know if you can see it, but it's this string of beads, actually. And they are, these are seeds strung together and painted. But I have realized that one of the objects that I've been working with without quite knowing is the seed, because here in our property we've been propagating, and we've been growing from seed, and it's been amazing. I've never grown from seed before. I've only ever bought seedlings, and so. Like really planting seeds and growing from seeds and learning about seeds. And then, of course, then the symbolic nature of seed is kind of, in terms of ritual, is really extraordinary because seeds hold time. They hold past, present, and future time. So that feels really, I mean, it feels really exciting to have discovered it, and in the form of a kind of necklace, in this instance anyway, because necklaces are also magical sort of objects, pretty gendered, but magical.
Where did you find it? Or how was, when you say find?
The necklaces? These necklaces I've had for some time, and they are from, I believe they're from Bolivia, or not that I've been to Bolivia, I've just bought them in a Bolivian shop. But I bought them because I just liked them, but then I think when I was looking at them, I realized, oh, these are seeds. And I hadn't quite realized that before. And then I've been dealing with seeds, and I wanted to read you something, actually. It's not a collection. I don't think we have time for that. But I just wanted to read you this that I had written down from an artist called Sophie Munns, who works with seed. She says, 30,000 terrestrial plants are known to be edible. Yet today, 75% of the world's food comes from just 12 plant and 5 animal species. We grow fewer diverse varieties in favor of high-yielding industrial crops, reducing seed by seed our bonds with regional fruits, vegetables, and grains. We've forgotten how to grow from seeds, how to cook and savor foods of diversity. When diversity is lost, crops grow extinct. Mm. I thought that was amazing that it's just, you know, like just monoculture. And yeah, and we're starting to deal with heirloom, you know, speaking of inheritance, we've started to look into heirloom vegetables.
Yeah, amazing. I think it's so interesting that you already had it, or you already had them. I think that there's something about objects that I feel like what I also like or enjoy about them is that I, even if it's a dance object, I will interrupt myself to give you an object. So this is a small children in fluorescent vests. So even the so this is from my collection in the Listening to Tanto, but even this so the objects, it's not something that you've made, but it is something that has somehow transformed for you, you know, either like intuitively or because you've been working with seeds. So there is this moment, this change or this transformation. Which really relates to ritual, I feel. And
that was beautiful, by the way. I could really see the fluorescence in that object and the high vis. And I love the collection of objects as dancers. I mean, that's a whole nother realm, I think. But what I really also found about these, in terms of transformation, is a costume, maybe, or like what, you know, I feel slightly like it's a slightly different persona wearing these things, or wearing this jewelry, or like putting on my jewelry, and how that changes the way I sit or stand or enter a room or feel about myself, encounter others. And I think that the relationship between costume and ceremony is a very ancient one.
Yeah. I also wonder about, so you have costume, ceremony, you spoke about inheritance and time. I wonder then about memory and this lost, lost or lostness. And this, this place of, I mean, we've spoken about it before in the context of language, because my history, or, you know, the being from Wales, and that we there's been a big movement of people relearning Welsh, which is part of my family history, and that this is, you know, even after relearning or so it's my first language, but still there's the gaps of the generations that didn't speak Welsh. And I wonder about that in relation to seeds also, of, you know, that you are working in the place where you live. Where did you use your recultivating, or no, I don't know what you said.
Propagating, in the garden, in the orchard, we have a Yeah, it's because of the weather, it's been quite cold here. We've been bringing the seeds inside, we keep them out. It's like having a pet or a baby or something, because you're cultivating growth when you plant seeds, and so you have to take care of them because they're they're so fragile. I mean, they may or may not grow, and they grow in their own time. 6 weeks later, we're going, where are they? And then, they're not in clock time. They're in a different kind of time. But we've been keeping them in the house until they're sort of mature enough to go into the ground, really, because we don't have a hothouse. So they're with us. Not in our beds, but in our lounge rooms at night, being warm, and then we take them out. So there's this kind of ritual of taking them out, giving them air, covering them up, bringing them back in. I think what I also really identified about seeds was that they hold mystery. They hold a kind of incredible potential, because inside that seed is a tree or whatever, an oak or whatever it is. But they also hold this kind of, and that's what I really I recognize in some of the things that you've been talking about and some of the scores that you've been sharing. And when you speak about transformation, is this sort of this mystery. Did you bring any other, like, is there another object from your collection? Dance object?
I have one. It's funny because I have to two of them so that they're okay in this with this. I'm gonna say distance, but which is ludicrous because you are in Australia. Well, I meant the distance in my computer. This one is it's always near the end of the when I show the collection, it's always near the end. So maybe that's fitting. This one is being close to water.
Susan, do you know Susan Sentler? Do you know Susan?
I do know Susan.
Hi, Susan.
Hi, Susan.
Susan writes, close to water or perhaps on, as in to float.
Well, this one, no, this is really being close to water. This is from listening to Tanto, and as I said, I'm on an island here. Like Stockholm is an archipelago, so there's always this closeness to water. But since it's a city, it's not always, I don't always feel it, or it's not always. It's not like where I grew up in Aberystwyth, where there's the sea and one can feel from the light or the smell of the salt or the sound of this orientation to water as west very much. Whereas here it's really all around, but sometimes not at all evident to me. So close to water, being close to water is it's like a naming or saying I'm close to water and being close to water. But maybe if Susan would do it, maybe she would collect a different object. Maybe hers would be
Well, I actually just had a memory of Susan's installation, which was all about water. Maybe it was an amazing, like I remember, Susan can't correct me, but I remember these photographs being dipped into this chemical, solution that makes a photographic print, and then them being hung in the studio. And it was very watery kind of pelagic. Susan writes, "Yes, I'm obsessed by water." And for me, like I remember, Estelle's here, so I guess the Q&A is going to start. But just very quickly, I swam, I jumped into the river because I was like, "Well, I have to go in. I need to enter this water, this body of water. I have to, yeah." And it's a very different feeling being in a boat, being in a kayak, which is very close to the water, but it's on the water, gliding. It's making passage to swimming. And especially when the fisherman shouted to me that the snakes are on the move. And I didn't know that tiger snakes and copperheads swim. And he's like, "They're in the water." So that was a whole nother level of adventure.
So you were happy you were on the water, not in the water.
Well, it was beautiful to be in the water. It was so great to be in. And also, it was amazing to be on the water, especially in the morning. We went out at 5 a.m. pre-dawn, and so the mist was rising. Maybe I could show you another time. I could collect or make mist rising objects here.
Yes, please. I mean, now I'm imagining your different dances in the different places. I wonder, is to touching or turning towards, just I'm wondering, I'm sort of imagining what that was and thinking, yeah, but for me also dancing is a way of meeting place. Of meeting a place.
Yeah, totally.
I'm just going to jump in with a question. Thank you, Amari and Cyril. We just have a question from Leah Landor. Says, thank you, Cyril and Amara. Cyril, I'm wondering about your glossaries. How fixed or stable are these? How do you add to them, or do you work with different definitions, different glossaries, depending on where you are? Or how do you add to them, keep track? Thank you.
Hello, Leah. Lots of love to you. Thank you for your question. Yeah, the glossary. I guess it's a developing practice. I also have been working with it with different artists and working with them, so co-writing glossary for particular works. Alice Mackenzie is one of them, and so it's very much. The practice itself sort of transforms or changes. But the glossary itself, like for me, they really relate to a particular work. So it's not that like constellation always means, it's not like a general, it's not a general a definition or yeah, it's not a general definition for constellation. It's like really for this work now, and I think I don't really she's making listening sounds. I don't add to them. I really move on to another word, or I write again. So I would write again from now. So I don't tend to add or edit. Yeah, they are not edited or added to throughout the work, but they're you see them as like this, very specific to this place, this time that I wrote them in relation to this particular inquiry or piece. Did that answer you, Leah? I hope so.
Oh, sorry.
She's asking, do you ever put glossaries from different works next to each other? Not yet, but that could be interesting. But normally, I haven't noticed I haven't noticed continuation of words, to be honest. So far, they've been like really, really. I'll see them as like very distinct.
We have another question. For dancing, I think this is to both of you, for dancing in place or with place and understanding site complexities, how do you navigate the implications when exploring relations between body and place on stolen lands? Is there an invitation?
What was the last bit? Is there
an invitation?
Invitation? Is that the word?
Well, maybe stolen lands refer to particularly to Australia. I don't know if you consider Sweden in that way, but it's an ongoing question, and I think for all of us who are not First Nations, and it reminds me I can't remember sort of where I heard this, but it doesn't come from me, but that you ask permission from the land itself, like you say, can I dance here? Which I sometimes remember to do and other times I don't, but I think in the act of dancing there, perhaps I feel that permission, even though I don't remember to ask it through language. I also feel that First Nations Australians, Indigenous Australians, would be delighted that we are dancing on country. If we're doing it with respect and listening to and in place, I think that's exactly what they are asking us and have been asking us to do. And also one of the other things is, you know, yes, I'm a guest in this country, but I'm also a host too. And this is something about, you know, when you're in residence as well, when you're picked up and taken somewhere and dropped in another part of the world or another context, and you're a guest in that context, but you are also a host because you're, you know, just acknowledging as an artist my power in that situation or my privilege in that situation. And, you know, hosting is something that Siriol and I have been talking about because we've been talking about how to host a dance. So I guess these are the things that I think about and I feel when I feel invited, to use your word, to dance or make that invitation to the place itself.
Thanks, Samara. I think we've got time for one more question, which comes from Susan Sentler. Susan says, thank you both so very much, so rich, and asks the question, are you both interested as well in relationship to objects dissolving, distilling into their materiality, the collection or mosaic of materials within the container, the host of the object?
I have to read that again. Dissolving, distilling into their materiality.
Perhaps I could respond by saying, with the object of language, yes, Susan, I think I've been practicing that for some time. With objects like this, no, because I'm still dealing with them. I sort of feel like in order to distill something or to undo it, I need to spend some time with it, and to know it. And I feel very like I know language, or at least the English language. But just maybe an aside here, or to add to the conversation, is that Siriol has been working with this idea of a lost dance, not the idea of a lost dance. Actually, she's been working with a lost dance. And I've been working for a long time with a lost language because I stopped speaking my mother tongue when I came to Australia. So in some ways I dissolve language in order to it's like it's like I have this language inside of me, but it's like an iceberg. It doesn't have an iceberg that's hidden under the surface. So yeah, my relationship to English is very complex because I'm very versed in English. And I decided at a very young age that I was going to be excellent at English, and I just like was driven to speak English, to speak the language of my colonizers to the highest level. At the cost of my of another tongue. So I don't know if that really answers your question. So yes and no, maybe. I don't know. And I don't know.
Thanks, Samara. I think that's all we have time for. I would like to say a huge thank you to you, Amara and Cyril, for your generosity and insights over this last hour. And thank you to everyone who's joined us for this event. I really hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as we did. I would just like to take this opportunity again to say thank you to Sarah and Ben, our Auslan interpreters. And yes, that's all for this evening. If you do have any feedback, please feel free to send it through to admin@lucygearandinc.com. We always welcome and invite your feedback as we continue to present these events both online and hopefully more in person soon. Thank you very much for joining us.